I think the only thing that's been different has been the greater repression and the inability of any candidate to get on the ballot who's vaguely critical of the war in Ukraine or of Putin's regime.
And the world has to realize that Vladimir Putin is getting ready for a very long war. And if he is allowed any kind of victory in this particular war, he will continue.
This is the new paradigm. And so decisions that the Kremlin needs to take are real trade-offs. And this shrinks their bandwidth and capacity to carry on without changes. So let's see. I don't think it will take a long time for us to see what the trade-offs actually are and how they're going to be resolved.
Following Vladimir Putin's election victory for a fifth term, in a vote criticized by many international observers, Global Insight considers the significance of the result, state of rule of law in Russia, and the major challenges now facing the international community and the Kremlin. First, here's Yevgenia Karamurza, the wife of Russian dissident and campaigner Vladimir Karamurza, who's serving a 25-year prison sentence for treason. She talks about why the vote cannot be called a democratic election.
Not when Vladimir Putin is running for the fifth time, not after the 2020 so-called referendum in Russia that basically destroyed the country's fundamental law and made Vladimir Putin into a tsar forever. And I have to mention that the results of that referendum were not recognized by the international community. And the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe recently adopted a report and a resolution calling on its member states to not recognize the legitimacy of Vladimir Putin as head of state following the so-called election. And of course, this procedure cannot be called election and cannot be seen as a legitimate process, considering the fact that it will take place on the occupied Ukrainian territories, where people are forced to accept Russian citizenship in exchange for humanitarian aid. People are coerced to become Russian citizens in exchange for medicine. And no results can be seen as legitimate in such a process.
Angela Stent is a Russian foreign policy expert and senior non-resident fellow at the Brookings Institution. She spoke about what made this Russian election different and the US-Russia relationship.
I think the only thing that's been different has been the greater repression and the inability of any candidate to get on the ballot who's vaguely critical of the war in Ukraine or of Putin's regime. And I think the other feature is, as we've seen, not only with not allowing anyone on the ballot who's critical of Putin, but also with the death of Navalny, which I think was not coincidental. I think it was a warning to other Russians that this can happen to you if you oppose the war, if you oppose Putin. So greater repression. And I think also this time, the pressure has been on for Putin and the Kremlin to show how legitimate he is, that he's the great leader who's leading Russia to victory in this war.
You mentioned the death of Alexei Navalny. You've had his funeral. What do you make of the reaction in Russia?
We've seen some people who have been called in for questioning. So every person that did that risked their freedom, at least, to go and show their solidarity with Navalny and say that they wish there were a better Russia. It wasn't a huge number of people, but it was in the tens of thousands. So I think that was probably also for the Kremlin to try and figure out how many people, you know, would come out and protest, how many people would publicly show that they're against the war. So I think we had a demonstration of that. Unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to continue. But at that moment, I think it was a snapshot of people of all ages coming out and saying, we want a different Russia.
And recently, President Putin came out to say that he was in favor of President Joe Biden over Donald Trump. What do you make of this so-called endorsement?
This is typical disinformation. I mean, Putin likes to keep everyone guessing. And I think to hang on every word he said is really a mistake. Because if you listen to what he said in the long interview with Tucker Carlson, he says one thing. And then, of course, when he suddenly comes out and says, well, Biden would be a better president, he has more experience, and everyone jumps. Who knows what he really believes? But what he certainly wants to do is, again, create this confusion and enable the Trump people during the campaign to say, see, Biden is favored by Putin. What do you think that means?
And at this point, how do you think the result of the US presidential election could potentially alter Putin's military campaign in Ukraine?
If Biden is reelected, and if you have a majority of Democrats, at least in one of the houses of Congress, I think the assistance for Ukraine will continue. It may not be quite on the level that it's been before. And of course, the US is going through a very polarized debate now about whether Congress will vote to allocate $60 billion, some of which would go directly to Ukraine to send money and weapons to Ukraine. But that would presumably continue in a Biden administration, since we believe the war will be going on next year as well as this year. It's hard to say what would happen if Trump became president. But I would just say, if you look at the record from the first Trump administration, despite his rhetoric and saying that he admired Putin and that why can't we get along with Russia, in fact, his administration imposed rafts of sanctions on Russia. It pulled out of two major arms control agreements, and nothing very much was accomplished with Russia. But that was partly because he was at that point surrounded by people, his cabinet officers, who came, let's say, from a more conventional background and were very wary of Russia and restrained him. He's being advised by a rather new group, some of the same figures from the first administration, but a new group of advisors, for instance, many of whom are housed in the Heritage Foundation, a think tank in the United States, and some other organizations that do have a different view of America's role in the world. And if those people prevailed, then maybe you could see more of a shift in US policy towards Russia.
Kara Mirza, who also lives in the US, says Putin will be watching the US presidential election closely.
Well, the US election is definitely significant for Vladimir Putin. President Trump has already said a number of times that if it were up to him, the war would end in a day. This means that he would support any kind of negotiation between Russia and Ukraine, and this would mean that Ukraine will be coerced to donate part of its territory to Vladimir Putin to yet again appease a dictator, which would lead to more wars in the future because Vladimir Putin will never be satisfied. The ongoing war of aggression against Ukraine is the result of over two decades of appeasement, over two decades of compromises, of the world offering compromises to Vladimir Putin. He did not start a full-scale war in early 2000s. No, he did it little by little. You know, he took small steps and watched for the reaction. And that appeasement, that the ignoring of him as an aggressor led to the full-scale war of aggression that we're witnessing today. So I believe that if Ukraine is somehow forced to accept negotiation, if Vladimir Putin is allowed to represent anything as a victory, warmonging will only continue, because the entire Russian economy is being militarized right now. It has to be understood. Propaganda is in schools is meant to raise these people into good Russian soldiers. And the world has to realize that Vladimir Putin is getting ready for a very long war. And if he is allowed any kind of victory in this particular war, he will continue.
Alex Yusupov, head of the Russia program at the Friedrich Ebert Stiftung in Berlin, speaks about why the election matters, both inside and outside Russia, and the challenges facing Putin as he enters his fifth term.
There was a point in time, a year ago, when there was talk in Moscow policy circles to postpone them, because indeed, the more you invigorate and the more you use the image of a nation at war, where you need to concentrate all of your forces towards challenging the Western onslaught through Ukraine and in all other directions, and this is the rhetoric of the Kremlin propaganda, the more you could say, well, let's not do elections at this point of time, let's postpone them until a better time. But then the mutiny of Yevgeny Prigozhin happened. And I think this idea of postponing the elections, which was floated by different people publicly, was completely abandoned, because not having an election on schedule would probably strengthen the idea that the regime is not as stable as it wants everyone to see it. And this is something where, again, the idea of control, the idea of normalcy, the idea of weathering the pressure from outside is very important. It's not about competition. It's not about actually, some kind of a domestic political process. It is about normalcy. So if we scheduled an election, we ought to have it. So this is probably the message. It's important the elections have been carried out. And now, before the terror attack in Moscow, it was clear that some unpleasant measures will be taken now. For example, a substantial tax reform. The tax reform may be a partial mobilization to relieve the forces at the battlefront, so to let them go home, basically. I don't believe that full-scale mobilization wasn't planned, but Kremlin has a problem with the protests of wives and sisters and mothers of many mobilized men. They cannot subdue those protests, so it's about spreading the burden of the war effort fairly, and the Kremlin probably is going to do that by a different partial mobilization at some point. And those unpleasant measures have been saved for after the election. And so now that, the agenda is a little bit messed up by the terror attack at the Krokus City Hall in Moscow, I don't know how it's going to go, but it was clear, let's protocol, we are a democratic society, we have elected the leader, which was best for us, and now we'll just carry on. That was the message of the election.
Yeah, and as you say, we just a few days after the election result, we had this terrible terrorist attack on the concert hall just outside Moscow. Putin has already been pretty clear that he wants to pin the blame on Ukraine, despite the fact that ISIS have claimed responsibility. What do you make of this?
Well, it's actually a black swan. This is a black swan because obviously it is a genuine terror attack, and as far as I understand, the police and intelligence services in Russia are also quite clear that this is a genuine IS, or at least it is this branch, the Vilayat Khorasan, which is not the original IS, but has been recruiting in Central Asia and Tajikistan for a long time. And then on the other hand, you have a political directive to find some links to construct a connection to Ukraine, and we'll see if they actually will come up with some information which looks more like proof. And this is also a dilemma, because obviously if you will not be able to connect the attack to Ukraine, then another part of the old social contract between Putin and his population will start to crumble. And I think this is why he tries so forcefully to establish a link, because if it's a war, and if it's a war against the whole of the West, then it's understandable that a heinous thing like this could happen in Moscow. If you can't establish this connection, then it's a failure of your own system in the system. On the other hand, we can see how trade-offs are getting real for this course of action for the Kremlin. Either you keep the economic effort or you start deporting labor migrants. Either you concentrate on fighting Navalny sympathizers, preventing sabotage and suppressing liberal opposition, or you actually go back to the core mission of security services and start looking at terrorist threats. You can't have both. This is the new paradigm. And so decisions that the Kremlin needs to take are real trade-offs, and this shrinks their bandwidth and capacity to carry on without changes in this dilemma. Either you need to mobilize now as a society with the unpleasant measures, which are unpopular, which will have blowback, people will leave the country again, people will start opposing Kremlin's policy, or you need to probably direct your attention to domestic security and Islamist threats and lessen the priority of aggression in Ukraine. So let's see. I don't think it will take a long time for us to see what the trade-offs are actually are and how they're going to be resolved.